I'm Clint Emerson, and welcome to Season 2 of Can You Survive This Podcast, where the interview is just as dangerous as the scenarios I put my guests through. From hostage situations to natural disasters, carjackings, active shooters, and more, if you're looking for the skills necessary to survive these situations, then this is the show for you. That music, God, just gets me so excited. It's like frantic, it's scary, it's suspenseful, but that intro always makes me happy, happy. And today, we have a very special guest. He is the host of Blaze TV's Chad Prather Show and Humor Me with Chad Prather. He is a 2022 candidate for the Texas governorship. He's also author. You can see it behind me there if you're watching. I've got it on the shelf there. Am I Crazy? An unapologetic patriot take on the insanity of today's woke world. Welcome to the show, Chad. How you doing, buddy?
It's good to see you, Clint. I love it when you introduce people as a very special guest. Have you ever had, like, do you have categories of very special, special, and we just have a guest?
Yeah, it's actually, hey, I've got an awesome guest, or hey, I've got a guy that gives me a boner, or hey, I've got a very special. So, you know, you fall in the middle there.
All right. I like that. Well, it's good to be with you, man. I love the show. I appreciate you. I don't know how long I've known you now, but a
couple of years.
I always call you my my favorite assassin.
And I appreciate that. It makes me sound super cool. But yeah, so let's start with always the entertaining rapid fire. This will be fun. I am a non-political guy because I don't like politicians, even though you're running for one. But we'll get into that in a minute and have some fun with it. But first and foremost, rapid fire. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. Donkey or elephant?
A donkey.
A donkey, yeah. Red or blue?
Blue.
Yeah. Football or baseball?
Baseball.
All right. You're kind of, yeah. Okay. You're doing good. Constitutional carry or license to carry?
Constitutional carry.
Beautiful. A Texas summer or a Texas winter?
Texas summer.
Brisket or steak?
Steak.
Nice. Bourbon or beer?
Bourbon.
Yeah. There we go. I think I knew that. Apple pie or pecan pie?
Who made it? That's the deal, Clint. I'm gonna go with pecan pie.
There we go.
And I like the way you say pecan. Like growing up in the state of Georgia, that's how we said it. I figured out as I got older, it sounded dumb to say it that way.
It does.
So I sold out and started calling it pecan.
You're either a pecan or you're pecan't. I guess that has everything to do with prostate health. All right. Come and take it or don't tread on me.
Come and take it.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Circling back around, we got donkey versus elephant. You pick donkey. Is that just because you like donkeys or is that because of a political party?
No. On the political side of things, it would be an elephant. But when it comes to the animal, it would definitely be a donkey.
All right. I was trying to stump you. Maybe I did. I don't know. You're running as Republican though, right?
Yeah, I'm like you. I don't like politicians and I really don't like politics. You know, I've made a living running my mouth in political humor for a lot of years, making fun of politics. But the reason I'm running as a Republican, and I always said I would never, there's a few things I said I would never do. I said I'd never run for office and I said I would never align myself with a political party, but I knew the only way to primary the guy that's in office now was to run in his same party. So that's what I'm doing. I'm a conservative guy. Don't get me wrong. But at the end of the day, I hate political parties and I hate politicians.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's like politicians, attorneys, and tax people. You know, it's like those are the big three targets I've got on my list. All right. Red or blue? You pick blue. Any reason? Because of the shirt you're wearing or color of your eyes?
Right. I just don't like red. It's one of those, they say that the color red and the color yellow, inspire people to be hungry. Like, that's why, like, Burger King and McDonald's and all of, like, KFC, everything has red and yellow in their logos, predominantly red. I don't know what that is. Maybe it's, I don't know. It's, I don't know why that is, but there's just something triggering about red in my head that I don't like.
Yeah. Makes me want to drink a Coca-Cola for some reason. I don't know.
Bingo. Exactly.
Football or baseball? You pick baseball.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I just like a slow developing game. You know, they say that whenever you're watching a football game, there's really only about 10 minutes of the ball actually being in play out of the entire hour. You only watch about 10 minutes of actual action.
Yeah.
And baseball's a lot slower, more developing. And plus, I played baseball for a long, long time. So, got an affinity for it.
What'd you play? You play in high school, college? Where?
Yeah, all the above. I even did some minor league stuff went University of Georgia and did a lot of. I got a hair up my nose or something, but yeah, I lived it. I lived baseball until I was puking it up, man. I got to the point where I despised it. Didn't do anything. Didn't even watch baseball for years after that. I was so burned out on it, but. Have to go with the game of baseball.
All right. Well, that makes perfect sense to me. I had no idea that you played. That's pretty cool. What position did you play?
I was a catcher. Oh. Sort of like now.
Yep. Aren't we all? All right. Constitutional carry versus license to carry. You pick constitutional.
Yeah, I you know, shall not be infringed to me means exactly that. I think when you start putting a lot of rules and regulations in there, you know, we just passed they call it constitutional carry here in the state of Texas. It's really more permitless. If that law were passed in 1776, James Madison and Alexander Hamilton wouldn't be able to carry because they'd be too young. You know, to me, that's not constitutional. So I'm a lot more of a hands-off kind of guy.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think, you know, Texas just recently switched to that, as we both know. And, you know, I think there's great points that go on either side. When I had Jeff Gonzalez on, and if you haven't listened to that one, it's worthy. But he made some valid points that, you know, having trained people carrying guns is never a bad idea. And even if it's only the 8 hours they get to get their license, at least it's something. Versus the 21-year-old that goes in, buys a pistol, and walks out that day and starts carrying it with no clue on what to do with that thing. So, but on the flip side, the fact that if you're 21 and you want to go in and buy a gun and carry it, then you should be able to, you know, and you're taking a lot of responsibility in your hands. But that responsibility, I think, is a privilege everyone should have. So I understand why people are so split on it, but I'm a constitutional carry guy myself. It's like,
the way I look at that, Clint, is, you know, we discovered our dicks when we were about 12 or 13 years old, and nobody ever really gave us training on how to use that thing. And God, it's done way more damage than guns over the centuries.
Which leads us into the abortion controversy here in Texas. It's all because of guys with dicks. Damn it. We won't even touch that one. All right. So a Texas summer versus a Texas winter. Texas summer, you picked.
You know, the older I get, the hotter it feels, right? I'm 48 and about to be 49 in 2 weeks. And I'm at a point now where it just feels hotter. And that sounds like a negative thing. I just hate the cold, man. I hate to be cold. And plus, girls, they wear less clothing in the summertime. And, you know, where else can you put on girls put on these bikinis and float down the river, and you sit out there and just watch them by the thousands. So Texas offers a lot in the summer. We offer a lot of broken power grids and cold indoors in the wintertime based on our track record. So let's keep it hot in Texas.
Yeah, there you go. The future governor of Texas supports bikinis. There you go. You've heard it here.
Yeah.
Okay. We went with brisket versus steak. You pick steak.
I think, you know, I grew up in Georgia where I never had brisket until I moved to Texas 20 some odd years ago. I didn't know that there was such a thing as brisket. I grew up with pork barbecue and pulled pork, still my favorite form of barbecue. Which I know is sacrilegious to folks that are Texans, but I think people can screw up brisket quite a bit. You can screw up steak, certainly, but a lot of people that think they're pit masters, they can really F up a side of beef in a heartbeat if you're not careful. So to me, I just prefer the texture of steak and the flavor of steak, and and I'm pretty good at it, making it. So,
all right, well, I'll go with you on that. But yeah, I'm a brisket guy, and that's probably because, you know, I've been a Texan my whole life, and yeah, that's what you grow up loving. And it's our it's breakfast, lunch, and dinner in many formats. You know what I mean? You put it with your eggs, or you can eat it by itself at night, or both. Bourbon and beer. You picked bourbon.
Yeah, I've always been a whiskey and whiskey bourbon, somewhat of a scotch guy. I love a good bourbon. Beer, I've never been a big fan of beer. In fact, I got drunk, first time I ever got drunk in my life, I was 17 years old. I wanted to drink beer. I wanted to like beer so bad. And I hated the flavor of beer. I just hated it. My brother drank it all the time, and I thought it would be cool to drink beer. So I took a bunch of shots of Evan Williams whiskey. I got drunk in order to try beer. And so it kind of, I had to get drunk to like beer, and I had to use cheap ass Evan Williams whiskey to do it. And I just finally got to a point where I said, you know, it's okay. I enjoy two beers when it's hot outside, and I'm good on that. But no, it's definitely going to be the brown stuff.
Yeah. Well, my takeaway on that is 17 year old got drunk. Yep, running for governor. I love it. You know, you're already getting my vote. I mean, you're admitting, you're an open book, and you're admitting to things that most of these fucking politicians act like, oh, that never happened. The fact that
I always tell people, they ask about the skeletons in the closet. I said, there's no closet. I said, I arranged the skeletons out in the front yard like Halloween decoration. Yeah. There's no closet. We burned that shit down a long time ago.
Yeah, I think you kind of have to. You got to own it all, because someone's going to go dig it up with today's cyber infrastructure. All right. So apple pie versus pecan or pecan pie.
Pecan.
Yeah, there you go.
I like them both, honestly. I don't eat a lot of sweets, but if I'm going to do it, I think I just like the texture and the crunch of pecan pie. I mean, you could almost flip a coin on that, but I'm going to go, if I had to pick right now, if I'm at the Luby's and I'm walking through the line, it's going to be pecan.
There you go. And I go with pecan too, just because it's, you know, a lot of these questions I'm asking you really is the United States versus Texas. So yeah. Texas is, it's like dessert, if you were to look it up, and I don't know if it's been claimed the Texas dessert, kind of like the Texas flower or anything like that, but pecan pie is definitely up there. And then, of course, come and take it versus don't tread on me. You pick come and take it, which is Texas, one of Texas's first flags.
Yeah, you know, Battle of Gonzales. It's one of those things. I always appreciate the Texas history because you know, American history, we won our independence because of things that were being done to us. And you have to appreciate those guys and their resolve and resilience to say, we're not going to take this anymore. But you had these folks, these peasants, these villagers, these Texians, if you will, in the city of Gonzales, and they had a cannon that didn't even work anymore. And when the Mexicans said, hey, we want that cannon back, they were like, you know, screw you. You come take it. You're not getting our, you know, non-functioning cannon. I mean, this is our one phallic symbol that shows our power. If you want it, come and get this thing. So I love that attitude that the Texians had in regard to that.
Yeah, no, it is an awesome history. And I do like to compare and contrast because we joke about it, but we're almost kind of sort of serious, you know, that Texas is its own country and we're proud of Texas having been its own country at one point in time. In Texas, and you know, in the news has certainly been you know, shaking things up, whether it's been abortion, what else, our gun laws.
If you turn on the television, if you go to the news, you're going to see the images. If they're talking about border security and they're talking about open borders, you're going to see the Texas border.
Right.
They're not talking about New Mexico, Arizona, or California's southern border, and all three of those have it. They're going to talk about Texas because I believe that Texas has a target on its back because of that attitude that Texas has of you know, that come and take it attitude, that humble arrogance with everything bigger in Texas, you know, the size, the economy, the privilege, the power, the sense of identity that we have here in Texas. I see Texas kind of as the anchor that America's holding on to right now in terms of what made America great originally. And so Texas is that last bastion of freedom that has the ability to kind of put America back on track if America wants to be on that track. And Texas basically kind of gives that middle finger and says, if you don't want to be on the right track, that's fine. We'll run on that track. We don't need you. And so that kind of that attitude, I kind of, you know, you got to love that, especially if you love liberty and a sense of independence and freedom.
Yeah, I certainly do. And I think people are starting to get it. Hence the reason why we have so many people moving. We have thousands of people moving here every day to the great state of Texas or the great country of Texas. And what do you think about that California invasion?
Well, it depends on what part of California is coming. I know a lot of individuals and a lot of families who are getting out of the cesspool, which is California. You know, California is a reasonably good state, right? It's a beautiful place. The weather's great. The people are beautiful. It's got beautiful country. It's the number one state in America for agriculture and ranching. But they're being screwed by bureaucracy, right? So if you define it by the big cities, that's problematic. But people are, they're starting to come out because they do have conservative values and they feel like their liberties are being taken away from them and they're being taxed to death and there's no freedom in California. I welcome those folks to Texas. The problem that I have is when you start bringing in the Teslas and the Amazons and the Googles and the Facebooks and you start turning Texas like Travis County, Austin, you start turning it into a miniature Silicon Valley because it brings with it not only their money and their influence and their people, but it brings their ideologies. And that becomes problematic for me. And I think when people say, don't California my Texas, that's what they're truly referring to.
Yeah, I agree. And I have to back that up with it's at the end of the day, California is where it's at because of how they vote. So as long as they don't bring the same voting logic to Texas, then Texas will be okay. But if they start voting exactly the same way they did in California, then we will end up in the same boat. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Well, so, you know, back to my earlier point about Texas having the size and economy to put America back on track. California has the size and economy, but they're not going to do it. I mean, they've gone, you know, as I say, you know, my book, as you referred to earlier, you know, An Unapologetic Patriot Takes on the Insanity of Today's Woke World. California's gotten so woke and so open-minded that their brains have spilled out. And, you know, you've got, you know, Sacramento and San Diego and San Francisco, LA, San Diego, you know, that's what you think of when you think of California. You know, you don't think of the Bakersfields and the Reddings. You don't think of the Visalias and those places out there, you know, and even, you know, San Luis Obispo, you know, those places where, you know, the wine country, the people, they still get their hands dirty when they go to work every day. We don't think about those parts of California as much. We just think about that urban sprawl of the South there. And now we think about this big blue, crazy wide open cesspool of wokeism that California's become because it's been defined by Hollywood and a weird hierarchy of nepotistic government there out of Sacramento with the Pelosi's and the Newsom's and so on and so forth. So, man, I hope that doesn't happen in Texas, but I got a feeling that if we don't do something quick about it, the government here in Texas has gotten so big that it's starting to mirror that in a lot of ways. And unfortunately, We're kind of headed the same way because our big cities, whether it's Dallas, Fort Worth, El Paso, San Antonio, Houston, Austin, those are big blueberries and a big bowl of red chili, right? So, you know, they would love nothing more than to see Texas kind of become a purplish to blue state in a big way because, again, they don't like these dissenters like us Texans.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, as we talked about the wall, I used to joke, like, why don't we build the wall to the northern border?
Yeah.
You know, let's keep Mexico on our side and let's build a wall the northern border of Texas.
Yeah, I always joke about that. I say, you know, build a southern wall all the way across from, you know, the border of Louisiana, Texas, all the way to California's coast, but then go north, right? And any place that sounds like it belongs in Mexico, build a wall around that. So San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco, you know, and then build it and keep going north, build it around Portland, build it around Seattle.
Yeah.
And then cut across with those Canadian bastards. I don't trust them at all, man. They come down here, they make millions and billions of dollars in Hollywood. You know, Jim Carrey, Justin Bieber, Ryan Reynolds, all these guys. And then they get woke and they start bucking against the capitalistic system, which made them rich and famous. And they want us to become democratic socialists or whatever they're calling it these days. You know, we ought to just set up a series of slingshots. And if you bitch about how we do things in America, we just shoot them back into Alberta. I think it'd be fantastic. We could even make money just selling tickets for people to watch that. We could commercialize the shit out of that.
I love it, man.
You're listening to Can You Survive This Podcast? Thanks for tuning in. Please make sure to subscribe, rate, and share on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows.
I heard a joke about, and then I was like, man, that's pretty valid. Like, anybody wanting to move to Texas should pay $5,000 for their driver's license, right? Like a tax.
I wish there was a way. I said over and over again, I wish there was a way we could put people on a hiatus or like a probationary period. So if you move to Texas, you should have to wait here at least 4 or 5 years before you can vote in state politics. Because to me, and in all seriousness, you know, I joke about it, but it's true. Texas is a spirit, right? It's more than a zip code or a geography. It's more than a border or a place on the map. It's a spirit, you know, and I tell people you can't teach that spirit. It's not taught, it's caught. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. Once you get it, you've got it. It's very contagious. And I remember coming hunting out here like 25 years ago. And I said to a friend of mine in Texas, I said, the funny thing about you Texans, I said, you guys would rather be Texans than Americans. And I kind of said it tongue in cheek, but he just stared at me like real serious. And he goes, don't fuck around and find out. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And I've learned that over the years. I mean, that's true. There is that spirit that says, look, we're not messing around here. Texas first. That really does become the kind of the mantra here. So I hope when people move to Texas, they know what they're getting into because they're up against a pretty large legacy here.
Yeah, I agree, man. It's something you're born and bred with here, and you're very proud of it. And you can drive the streets and you'll see the biggest flags waving in this state than any other state. And it's both the American flag and the Texas flag. And I tell people that being a Texan and being proud of it is a higher level of American patriotism, without a doubt. You know, it is, it is the next level up. It's not cutting away America. It's that highest order of patriotism is, you know, Texanism.
Yeah, no, it really is. And so I wasn't born in Texas, but I was conceived in Texas. And as a pro-life guy, you know, I always tell people, I say, I have Texas DNA.
Yeah.
You know, my parents did a dirty thing in a horrible place there in Dallas, you know. But I joke about how Dallas was different in 1972 and miracles happen in unlikely places. So I was conceived in Texas. And you know, regardless, it's kind of got, I just have that Texas DNA. When I came to Texas and like really started thinking about living in Texas, it was about 21 years ago. And I thought, you know, I can breathe here. I'm a country boy. I grew up down in the woods, man. And for a hyperactive guy, you know, I didn't have neighborhood friends. I had the dogs and the cows and the horses and the trees. And, you know, I was crazy, man. But for me, it was like I always felt constricted growing up down in the woods because I'd have to look straight up to see any blue in the sky because these 100-foot pine trees everywhere. I came to Texas and I was like, shit, I can see the sky here. Like I can breathe and I like it. So, you know, 6 months later, I had the truck packed up and I was moving out here and I've never looked back. To me, Texas is just the center of the universe. There's nothing like it, man. There's just absolutely nothing like it. And so out here on this campaign trail, you know, in the world, you know, having come from the world of entertainment, doing television and radio and all these different live shows, I'm used to being on an airplane or being on a tour bus or something like that. Now I'm in my truck and I'm driving all across the state doing this campaign stuff. And I'm hitting the smallest towns in Texas, the smallest counties. You know, most people don't know where Mitchell County is or Garza County or Erath County. Most people don't even know where those are. But man, it's a blessing to me because I just get reinvigorated by the spirit of Texas that's out there. And it's just so strong. People who, if you don't get it, you don't get it. You know, those old, those pictures we used to stare out at the kiosk in the mall that had the squiggly lines and all the colors and it was just gobbledygook in a frame. But if you looked at it kind of cross-eyed and looked through it, a picture would emerge in your brain and you would see like a jungle scene or a pirate ship or something. You know, to me, that's Texas. Like you either see it or you don't see it. But once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
And so it's a pretty special thing.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. That's I like it, man. You got a good like Cliff Notes version on what it's like to be in Texas or be a Texan. Obviously through lessons learned, moving here and living here. And I think you're right. People should be on a probationary period until they get hit with a little bit of Texas, which takes time. And then once they get it, then like you said, they get it. Switching gears, your book. Let me pull this thing off the shelf here. Let's talk about this, Am I Crazy? So when did this come out? Give us a little background here.
So then the book came out, I think it was released about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, something like that. It was in early October. It was supposed to come out in August, and there was a supply chain issue. You know how everybody's lumber was going higher? And apparently paper is made out of wood, too. So there was a shortage of paper. So they couldn't release it in August, then they couldn't release it in September, finally got it out in October. And the book, what we did was, I've run my mouth for a living. I'm very blessed to be able to talk for a living. And over the years, I'll ramble and rant on a little short basis of current events and personalities and headlines and things that are going on that I perceive are kind of crazy in the world. And so we just compiled a lot of those things over the last 2 years and started putting them together in a book form. And it just kind of began to evolve. It's what I call a common sense guide to the end of the world, because I think we're in this, we talk about cancel culture. Cancel culture is a very serious thing when you start trying to silence people and take away their voice. And you want to control culture by just absolutely wiping the dissenting voices or differing opinions off the map. So that's kind of what this book is. I took a lot of examples in different situations that have happened over the last couple of years, and I talk about them, but then there's underlying principles with all of those things that happen. And I try to take it and wrap it in a little bit of humor so it's an easier pill to swallow, put it in short chapter form. I call it a bathroom book because, like, I wish there were perforated pages. So, like, if you were taking a dump and you didn't like a chapter, you could just rip those out. And since the store shelves are barren of toilet paper these days, you could just wipe your ass with the book, go buy another one, and it would put me on the bestseller list.
That's so a great idea.
I got some weird ideas in that regard.
I like it, man. It's I think I haven't had a chance to dig into it as you just gave it to me literally a week ago. And I'm looking forward to digging into this one. It's listed under politics and humor, which you got to have some you got to have some humor to deal with politics. And obviously you got a bunch of that. So let's dig back a little bit into your past. When did you realize or when were you told you were funny or you decided that you wanted to be a comedian and get on the stage and do what you're doing?
Yeah, it kind of happened by default. I've been on a stage of some form or fashion my entire life. I was on TV for the first time when I was 3 years old. And, I always view playing sports as being on a stage. I enjoyed, playing in front of people. And then I did theater stuff in high school. And it was kind of crazy. I just always had this knack for talking and being in front of people and being able to communicate. And so then in my 20s and 30s, I spent a lot of time in third world countries. I was in Southeast Asia. I was a lot of time in West Africa, Central and South America, all over the Pacific Islands. And, I met my first wife in Nigeria. I went all the way to West Africa to meet a white girl from Alabama. So that was an interesting little deal. And I'd go on these trips. I'd go do these things, these adventures, as I call them, and do medical work and humanitarian aid work in these villages in the middle of nowhere. And then I'd come back and you always had the churches or these civic organizations that wanted you to come talk and tell your stories. So I would do that. And it was kind of motivational, but it was also funny, right? Because I just can't help but just, put my foot in my mouth sometimes. And then people would want to have you back because they didn't care if you motivated them. They just liked the fact that you made them laugh and it was entertaining. So, I did that more and more and more. And, kind of built a career out of that. And then this thing called social media came along and I kind of got addicted to Facebook and YouTube. And I go, I would say to myself, I'd say, there's a way to make a living using this tool. I just can't figure it out yet. And then it kind of hit me one day. I said, it's almost like owning your own television network. This idea of I can put any content out there that I want. So when I'd be going to a studio, driving down the highway, going to a studio to do voiceover work for a television show that I was doing on cable. And I would, on the way to the studio, I'd be sitting in traffic. So I just popped my camera phone up on the dashboard of my truck. And I would just, it was kind of therapeutic for me just to get stuff off my chest. And I'd post it on Facebook, and some people, you know, locally, they would watch it and laugh about it. And then one day it went viral, you know, I mean, it just went crazy. It was like a million views of one of these videos I did in the parking lot of the Target. And a million people watched this thing. It went crazy. My mother called me on the phone. She said, "I heard you're sick." And I'm like, "What?" She said, "Yeah, somebody told me you went viral." And I said, "No, I said, they're just talking about my Facebook and my Twitter." She said, "Chad, you're 40 years old. You don't need to be touching your Twitter. You're too old for all that." And so I'm like, I mean, this is my mother, right? And so, and I didn't have the nerve to tell her about my Snapchat, but it was kind of crazy, right? To have this thing just kind of took off with social media, went crazy. Then I had a friend of mine who was in comedy, and Bill Martin, he's a great comedian. And he said to me one day, he said, "Dude, you should go, like, you built this audience online. Why don't you go do something on stage and sell tickets to it?" I said, "Well, I'm not really a comedian." He said, "They'll buy tickets, man." Just, and I said, "Well, okay, well, I know how to tell funny stories." And so, you know, I wanted to honor the craft of comedy. I didn't want to just go up there and half-ass it. A lot of these social media guys do that. I didn't have the, "Hey, look at me" attitude of being on stage. So I went out and started kind of working and crafting comedy and what it was to put together a bit and how to tell a, you know, a joke and how to take an audience somewhere. And so that started for me about 7 years ago. And it's been very fruitful, incredible. It puts me in about 35 states a year, at least, doing about 130, 140 shows a year. And, you know, the world of politics was always intriguing to me. And I've kind of been a media junkie over the years. And so I started doing political humor and political jokes. And people kind of started knowing me as, you know, the political cowboy, because I, you know, I'm always wearing the cowboy hat. And, you know, so it kind of built that persona around that. And then the world of podcasting came around. I jumped on that, and Blaze TV picked me up to do a podcast, and that turned into a nightly talk show, which you've been on a couple of times. And so it's been an interesting journey, man. It was almost like when you just decide that, you know, you're going to be who you are and be comfortable in your own skin. And I kind of have that gift of gab. I've always said that if I can find somebody to walk slow or stand still, I'll talk to them. And so, you know, I've been able to make a living out of that, and I piss a lot of people off, and that's okay too, because some people just need to be pissed off. And sometimes I piss myself off, and that's okay too. But you know, it's a fun world we're living in. I mean, here I was doing radio and cable television, man. And something like Facebook sent my career like this. Oh, that can only happen in 21st century America. I mean, it really is crazy the time we live.
No, that's amazing. I mean, yeah, social media is just, it's turned things around. It's allowed everyone to be their own billboard without having to go, you know, pay for one, you know. And if you do it right and you build a following, it can do wonders for you. Obviously, you are a testament to that. Have you ever shared the stage with like Joe Rogan or those tours that he does, or y'all?
No,
y'all cross
never
paths?
Have. You know, I've been fortunate enough to get to know a lot of greats out there, you know, in the world of comedy. And I say greats, and I mean that too, because there's nobody, in my opinion, smarter than a good comedian. And I mean somebody that really understands the craft of comedy. That's why I always say I don't consider myself a comedian. I'm a humorist. You know, I just know how to tell funny stories, and I can do comedy, but I'm not naturally a comedian. You know, these guys who know how to craft it and really know how to take you somewhere on a journey, They're the greatest minds in the world. I was having a conversation this morning about a guy that I got to know a little bit who passed away recently, Norm Macdonald. You know, people didn't even know that Norm had cancer for as long as he did until he died. But, you know, that was one of the smartest guys on the planet. I mean, he had to have an IQ that was nearing 200. I mean, it was insane how smart this guy was. And people look at that and they say, "Oh, you know, you're running for office, you're running for governor, you're just a comedian." I'm like, "Holy shit, dude, you just compared me to some of the greatest minds that have ever existed on the planet. Thank you for doing that." You know, but these days, like, there's a reason why comedy is coming under attack, Clint. Like, you know, the Dave Chappelle debacle that went on recently with his newest special. People don't want you to tell jokes anymore because they're too easily offended. You know, the world of comedy is like, I call it that last bastion of free speech. They should be able to get under your skin, piss you off, make you think about yourself, make you introspective, you know, make you a little uncomfortable. But at the end of the day, you laugh at yourself. These days, people can't do that anymore. A great comedian knows how to do that. And so I've been fortunate enough, back to your question, to run across some super, super geniuses. Joe's one of them. Dave's another one. Dennis Miller. I mean, these guys that are out there, I could, and if George Carlin and Lenny Bruce could see what comedy has become today, they'd probably roll over in their graves, because they went to jail for telling jokes back in the 50s and 60s. And, you know, this is a big deal. It's a fight worth having, you know, in regards to free speech, and comedy is where it's at.
Yeah. Well, you are a funny bastard, and it comes natural for you. And it's, I'm always entertained, and my cheeks always hurt after we hang out a little bit. We will be right back after the break. Now, rolling into your Blaze, getting onto Blaze TV and getting your own show on there, that did that happen because of your YouTube channel, or where did that get connected?
Yeah. You know, they came to me a while, and they came, I was doing a podcast. The podcast was pretty successful. It was once a week, long form, you know, hour and a half, having a chat with somebody. And I loved that. Blaze came to me with a couple of ideas, and they wanted to do a kind of a television show type deal. And they also wanted to do a podcast. In the long run, we kind of merged the two, and the Chad Prather Show, aptly named, and very little creativity in naming it that after myself. It kind of became what it is. And, you know, I've been with Blaze now for 3 years. And for those who don't know, you know, Glenn Beck started the Blaze back in 2012. And they had a merger with Conservative Review TV, CRTV, which was Mark Levin's deal, and became a great little powerhouse conservative outlet for independent broadcasting. And they've been good to me. I've been with them for 3 years, and I keep thinking, you know, Clint, you've been around me enough to know, like, I don't have a lot of filter, and I just say things, and I'm like, holy shit, the executives are probably going to come after me now for saying some of the things that I've said. But, you know, the Blaze has always let me run my mouth. They have never at any time said, you might want to reel that in a little bit. Now, there's been some things I've said off the microphone, you know, to executives that they didn't like so much. But at the end of the day, they've been a real good defender of free speech. Yeah. Even when it's stupid speech. And I do a lot of that.
Yeah, I agree, man. There's the far right and there's the far left. And the Blaze is definitely on the far right. Wouldn't you agree? Or?
Well, I don't know that I would say far right, you know, and that's the thing, you know, they definitely lean right. They've got some libertarian voices that are on there, you know, Matt Kibbe, Andrew Wilkow. I consider myself a libertarian voice in a lot of ways. Eric July is a contributor. You know, some of those guys I just listed are real legit libertarians. They've had some guys who lean left. Andrew Heaton was on that. He had a program on the Blaze for a while. I mean, he's a left-leaning moderate. And so they've been fair in that regard. They're definitely small government guys, right? I mean, they're conservative guys that by and large, those they want the government, like me, I want the government out of our lives, right? I want us to be able to govern ourselves without a whole lot of, you know, a lot of invasion on the part of D.C. or any of our governments. And so, you know, here's the way I always look at it. I say, you know, you've got extremes. And people that want to get out on the wings, you know, I kind of look at things like this. I'm like, if I fly on an airplane, I want to be able to pick if I want to sit on the left side of the plane or the right side of the plane, right? Because some days you just feel like sitting on the right side of the plane. Sometimes it's better to sit on the left side of the plane. But I've never chosen to sit out on the wings, you know? And unfortunately, some people want to sit out on the wings, which to me, I don't think makes for a very comfortable ride. And I think by and large that when you get out on the wings, it's a dangerous place. Get back in as close you can to the middle. And, you know, I definitely am pretty outspoken and vocal about my convictions. And people will say, oh, man, he's just railing on about some right wing stuff. And I'm like, no, at the end of the day, you really listen. I'm pretty socially a liberal and very classically liberal overall and fiscally conservative. But I think that a lot of those folks there at the Blaze would kind of fall in that category. At the end of the day, we just want to be left alone. I want you to be left alone. I'm kind of in this fight to make sure that nobody's infringing on your rights. And at the end of the day, you get to make your own decisions, keep your money and spend it however you want to spend it.
Yeah, I like that, too. You're saying a lot of things I like, which leads me into this final piece with, you know, running for governor. We've hit on it. You've talked about it a little bit. So how does this work? I mean, you're going up against the incumbent, which is Abbott, right? And then who else have you got that?
So in the primary race, you've got, on the Republican side of things, you've got Abbott, of course, who's a 2-term governor. He was on the Supreme Court of Texas. He was the Attorney General of Texas. So he's got about 30 years of Texas politics under his belt. He's a popular guy, according to the national media. People think of him as a conservative governor. Most people who are conservatives in Texas, though, they seem kind of as a big politics sellout to big government. And there's Alan West, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, who's retired from the Army, and businessman, housing developer out of Dallas, Don Huffines. So the three of us, I was the first person to get in the primary race against Abbott. And the reason I did it, because again, to my earlier point, I said I would never get into politics. The reason I did it is because I was sitting there with Don Trump Jr. in South Dakota. I was drinking some wine. It was July 2nd. My phone goes off. I get a notification. You know, the world is, this was 2020. The world is shutting down everywhere over mandates, you know, and who's deemed essential and non-essential and what businesses and churches and gyms can stay open. And people are losing their jobs. They're masking up. They're scared to death. They don't know what they're up against. They're losing their livelihoods. And my phone goes off, and it said that the state of Texas is telling certain businesses, particularly bars, which are 51% establishments, 51% of their sales comes from alcohol. They were shutting down the bars and the live venues. And I took that kind of personal because, look, I make a living in bars and live venues. So that started pissing me off. And so I don't know if it's because I was drinking some wine or had maybe an extra glass of wine, or because I was sitting there with a Trump, but I went to Twitter because I mean, that's what you do, right? And I just said, I'm going to run for governor in 2022 in the state of Texas. Well, it blew up because of my following. People had just had it, you know? And so, you know, if you look at it, NBC called me a few weeks ago and they said, according to the media, I said, let me stop you right there, because what you're about to say is going to be BS. According to the media, it means nothing. They said, well, you know, Greg Abbott, the governor of Texas, is perceived as a good conservative governor. I said, well, he's violated our constitutional rights 14 times in the last 18 months. I mean, I don't see how you could see that that's a good conservative value. The guy's increased spending in the state in the last 7 years by $48 billion. Our property taxes are through the roof. We all know about border security being a mess. Our energy grid broke down last February. So there's a lot of things that are going on. He told you couldn't go to work, couldn't go out and have fun, couldn't have a beer, couldn't go to church, couldn't go to the gym. People don't realize it. Like, you may not want to go to the gym, but if you sign a contract with the gym, that's a constitutional right. They can't step in and say, okay, we're going to nullify that contract that you made with another entity. The government can't do that. That is a constitutional violation. You have a contract with that gym. You can go and honor that contract. Those are the kind of things that were happening that people just don't even see anymore. But they're willing to sweep it under the rug because it's what we've always known, right? Well, you keep doing the same thing over and over again. You get same results. It's just time for us to make a difference. So I jumped in. I said, I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. I'm going to use my platform and my voice. And if nothing else, we're educating people. We're turning the lights on. You know, I can see the ideas coming on. I always say when I see the light bulbs come on, I get those internet trolls that say, yeah, but with your followers, they're only 7.5-watt bulbs. So that's,
that's funny.
I did a show last year in Arizona with Jill Kimmel, Jimmy Kimmel's sister. She opened for me. And, you know, she's liberal. She's super liberal, just like Jimmy is. And she's a sweetheart, though. And she came to the show and we were in the green room. And she said, my friend told me not to come do these shows with you. She said, I was guaranteed to get COVID because this room's a room full of mouth breathers. I thought that was the funniest shit ever. But I said, you know, look, at the end of the day, I want government out of our lives. I want us to make politics boring again. I mean, why the hell do we keep giving credence to these empty-headed political morons like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Beto O'Rourke, and Eric Swalwell, and all these guys that, you know, they couldn't find their way out of the house with the lights off, much less run a country or a state or even a municipality. But we keep giving these guys credit and giving them attention. So, you know, hey, what do I know? I'm from the ilk of Donald Trump and Ronald Reagan. You know, we were entertainers and then we became politicians, I guess. Hey, I love this state, man. People, you know, when I announced it, people thought it was a publicity stunt. They're kind of waiting on the punchline. There's no punchline. I love the state of Texas, man. It is the center of the universe. It's my conviction. I'm very serious about it. So I'm happy to be in this thing. Oh, and by the way, prayfor2022.com. Hey, prayfor2022. Clint, you know what? People can even go to Beto22.com. It still comes to my website.
I love it. You hijacked that shit.
Yeah, exactly. Man,
that's awesome. Well, you know, I obviously wish you the best of luck on this thing. And I think you are shining a big light on just logic, common sense, straight shooting, and all encapsulated in humor, which I think we all need a little bit of from time to time. That's for sure, especially when it comes to politics. And I think the best thing you said was, let's make it boring again, because you're right, man. The media just tramples on the dumbest shit. And then, of course, you've got a majority of people that are watching and listening, you know, think that that's just the way it is. And the reality is, you know, I've said it before, 75-85% of the news is just grossly inaccurate. From my personal experience, sitting in war-torn countries and then watching the news, I don't care if it's CNN or Fox, they're showing footage from other countries saying it's, you know, the country that I'm in. And that it's, you know, all this chaos and fire and riots, and look out the window and there's absolutely nothing going on, because they're just reporting what gets clicks, what gets views, you know, what gets the biggest purse for the advertisement that you're about to see. And it's unfortunate because accuracy's gone out the window. But I appreciate what you're preaching.
Yeah, I mean, you saw on a microcosm, but it's a great example, you know, when the NASCAR thing happened and everybody was shouting F Joe Biden, and that reporter said, oh, listen, they're saying, let's go Brandon. You know, they twist that in a funny way, right? Because it's like that, we can't let the public hear that. We've got to tell them this.
Yeah.
Don't believe your ears and your eyes, believe what we're telling you. And, you know, it's the old propaganda adage. If we tell somebody something enough times, it becomes truth.
That is. And now you see it everywhere. Let's go, Brandon. Man, the media, they're evil. They're worse than politicians. We add them to the list. It's politicians, lawyers, tax people, and the media. All right, buddy. Well, as you know, you've got to face this hypothetical survival scenario. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready, man. I listened to your recent episode with Ant, and I'm like, good God. Like, I'm going to die.
Yeah, that was a great episode too, man. He's a funny
dude. He's a good dude, man.
Yeah. You're listening to Can You Survive This podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Please make sure to subscribe, rate, and share on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite shows. All right, so here we go. This is when the suspense music starts playing. Okay. So let's say for this scenario, you are, doing a road show. Okay. You're out of state, you're any state, any town that you want to go ahead and place yourself in on the East Coast. You just finished a great show and that town is small enough that you can walk back to your, hotel motel. It's nighttime and you walk back to the hotel alone, which I'm sure is completely untrue and false media. And as you get closer to the hotel, a car pulls in front of you and blocks your path, okay? A person with a gun gets out of the driver's seat, okay? And the person points the gun at your chest, motions for you to get in the car. I saw your show tonight. Get in the car. This might be political. First question. First, do you A, avoid escalating the situation, play ball and go ahead and get in the car, or B, wrestle the gun away from him?
Those are my options, huh? If those are the two options, I'm going to die, dude. I'm going to wrestle the gun away. I'm not getting the fucking car.
Well, that'd be very Texas of you for sure.
But, you know, when you're outgunned, outnumbered, or taking severe blows of the head, sometimes you have to temporarily surrender to take control of the situation so you can escape.
I think that I would get in the car. I mean, I'm putting myself in that perspective. I would get in the car because, I mean, you know, that's you know, otherwise I'm getting shot. But, yeah, that's you talk tough, but I'd get in the car.
Yeah. I mean, it's can you take control of a person with a gun even though you don't have anything? Yes. And I think a lot of people underestimate their capabilities, and they see a person with a gun and immediately go, he's got the advantage, or she's got the advantage. Mm-hmm. I can't do anything. I might as well just sit here. I might as well do nothing. I agree. You could fight, but you take a chance of, you know, taking a round in the gut or in the head or in the chest. And or if you know what you're doing, you really think it through, you can take advantage of these guys, give in temporarily, and so that you can set yourself up for a clean escape later. So, but once again, if you're outgunned, which you are, outnumbered, or taking severe blows to the head, that temporary surrender is always a good option. And the reason I say that, especially severe blows to the head, the last thing you want to do is get knocked out and then wake up chained to a wall in a place you have no idea where you're at. Okay, so a lot of times keep the situation from escalating is key. And without some training in combatives or some other type of self-defense training, wrestling someone with a gun could turn out pretty bad. Play ball for now and live another day, which is always the goal. If you start a fight, person clearly is unstable, so you don't know where it's going to go. So you're in the car. Do you A, calmly try to feel out the situation, befriend the person, build rapport, and take some things down a notch, or B, give the person a lot of attitude and threaten extreme retribution?
I have a reasonably good gift of gab and persuasion skills. I'm a great salesman, so I'm going to go with the first option. I'm going to try to de-escalate and compliment his mother.
Yeah, I truly believe that. I think you actually could, no matter what this person's thinking or whatever level of mental acuity they got going on. I think you could actually talk them down. Trying to befriend the person and build rapport, finding some common ground. You know, what you're doing in that process is saying, hey, look, I'm a human. We're humans. We're in this together. Because a lot of these bad guys don't realize that when they take a prisoner, they're actually becoming a prisoner themselves, right? Mm. So just tread lightly. Don't push too hard. Remaining calm and keeping the situation calm is definitely the key. And then a little bit of friendliness never hurts. But then the kidnapper pulls the car over. They point the gun at you and tell you to hold your hands out towards them. Okay? So do you A, present your hands, or B, grab the gun and start brawling?
Present my hands.
All right. Yeah. Okay. You're on the right path here for this scenario. We're taking the de-escalation route, okay? Sure, we have other scenarios where you're going to fight it out, but this one, yes, de-escalation is key. Again, with extensive training in combative self-defense, if you know what you're doing and you do it all the time, then so be it. You put your confidence into the fight. But if you don't have that, then de-escalation is definitely a better choice. So you reluctantly present your hands to your captor. Your captor pulls out a roll of duct tape and begins to tape your hands at the wrists. So do you A, press your wrists close together, making it easy for your captor to go ahead and tape you up, or B, press your palms together with your wrists a little outwards, creating a gap, and get taped up?
I am going to put my palms together.
That's right. Correct. By pressing your palms together and your wrists out, To the bad guy, it just looks like your wrists are together. But that little difference is what sets you up for the escape later. So you make it hard. You know, you're putting that tape on and you're having a gap already in place as you're getting restrained. And that gap is what's going to set you free later. So now you pull up to a house. You are ordered to get out of the car. And your captor says that you're going to go into the house as well. So do you, A, take off running, or B, play it cool and do as you're told?
I'm going to do as I'm told in that situation.
There you go. Do as you're told. You're going to, outrunning a bullet probably not going to happen. And plus, you're taped up. So if there's any barriers, fence lines, anything, they're going to be pretty difficult to negotiate with your hands taped together. So you do as you're told. Once inside, you see a couple of kids running around and playing. So you're still duct tape, hands in front of your body. And luckily, the tape is kind of loose because of the gap you created. So do you A, grab one of the kids as a hostage and demand to be let go, or B, keep playing it cool and do what you're told?
I'm still playing it cool. I'm still copacetic, baby.
That's right. All right, do as you're told. You don't want to piss this person off, and by grabbing a kid, we'll probably do that. And it's obvious that they're clearly unstable, that they're bringing a restrained man into their home with their kids. So they might not be their kids, but we think they're their kids. So now you're taken into a room in the house. Now the handcuffs are added to your wrists in addition to the tape. A bag is placed over your head, and you are placed in a chair in the corner of the room. Okay, so do you A, pretend to be asleep and hope the captor loses interest in you, or B, ask to go to the bathroom?
I'm going to ask to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, and what's your reasoning for that?
I'm going to try to, one, see circumstantially what the surroundings are, what kind of environment I'm in, what's available to me in terms of resources. And also change the pace a little bit from they're not dictating the circumstances much.
Yeah, there you go. I think once you kind of start to build some rapport, you want to throw a demand out there or a request and see what you can and cannot get away with. And it kind of determines where they're at with everything. So, you know, and you've also gotten to the point where playing it cool hasn't actually – it's worked because you're still alive, but you're not sure how much further it's going to actually do you any good, right? As the restraints become more and more. So they say yes, that your request to the bathroom has been granted. They take you to the bathroom, remove your hood and the handcuffs, but you're still duct tape and leave you alone in the bathroom. You quickly check for supplies while you're in there, but you don't find much. You check the small window that you see, and that it looks like you're about 30 feet up, right? So do you A, flush the toilet, then jump out the small window with a 30-foot drop, or flush the toilet, then defeat the duct tape with force?
I'm going to defeat the duct tape with force, not jumping out.
That's right. There's, obviously with duct tape, it's a destructive method. You can use your body as a wedge, put your wrists out in front of you at eye level, and then rocket your elbows past your rib cage. And usually the tape will break and it'll look like it's been cut with a pair of scissors. Or you can use friction. Find the corner of a wall, cinder block, whatever you've got around you, and start going back and forth. There's a lot of ways, but you want to break that tape free. So with your hands freed now, do you A, wrap the duct tape back around your wrists and return to the kidnapper so he does not realize that you're actually free, or B, remove the tank cover from the toilet as you exit the bathroom and knock out the kidnapper with the toilet tank cover?
This is where I die, because when I walked in the bathroom, my first thought was that tank cover.
I think you're on the right path.
You know, I think that's your first. I think that's your first opportunity to a weapon. I mean, how many locked doors are you behind at this point? At some point in time, you've got to overpower your captor. So I'm going to think real hard about the tank cover, and in this, because if you go back out with the duct tape, they're just putting the cuffs right back on you.
That's right. You know what you're going back into now. So, yes, you remove the tank cover from the toilet as you exit the bathroom. And, you're going to just go for it. De-escalation, basically, has come to an end. And Chad is going to go Rambo. So, You know, trying to knock a guy out with a big object like that, you got door frames and you don't know how things are going to go when that door opens, but you've got to take that chance. And you take advantage with that surprise attack and you get lucky and you knock his ass out. So good job, Chad. So last question. Do you A, search the house, look for accomplices or evidence of the kidnapper's motive, or B, sneak out downstairs, maintain stealthy movements, and sneak out and avoid alerting anyone else while your kidnapper is TKO'd? Or no, he's actually KO'd.
I'm getting the hell out of there.
That's right. You're not Rambo, and you're not a cop, and it's not your job to looking for stuff, but you did your best, you know, to de-escalate the situation and keep things calm like a good politician should. And then when it was time to fight, you fought and you won. So you have survived this podcast. Good job there, Chad. Congratulations.
It felt good doing it, too. It felt good doing it, Clint.
Yeah, no, I bet.
Just smacking that dude with a porcelain tank lid. I love it.
Yeah, I wonder. I think that actually would feel good. But yeah, you did you knocked him out. Good job. And so before we go here, where can people find everything that you've got going on, and even, you know, buy some of your goods? I actually just recently bought one of your lightweight hoodies and t-shirt. Awesome. The t-shirt that said most likely to secede with the state of Texas on it. I thought that was awesome and creative. But where can people find out more about you, go watch your show, and buy some of your cool apparel?
Yeah, I appreciate that, man. And the one-stop shop for pretty much everything I do is Watch Chad Prather, the most vain URL you can imagine. Watchchad.com. is the easy one. Watchchad.com. And we got our store there. We got a list of public events, you know, our live shows as well as campaign things. And you get the book there. There's a whole kind of stuff that's there. We're actually working on a new deal, ChadPrather.com, which is going to be my new blog and news site, which kind of brings the news, but with an element of humor to it. So we're going to launch that in the next week. But watchchad.com is going to be the place where it links to everything.
Okay, there you go, everyone. Watchchad.com. And hey, thanks for coming on the show, buddy. I do appreciate it. I love hanging out with you. Like I said before, I think you bring a lot of logic, common sense, straight shooting humor to politics. I think it's needed. And I appreciate everything that you do.
You as well, brother. Thanks for everything, man. Always enjoy it being with you.
Awesome, man. Like I always say, keep it simple, because crisis will complicate the rest. And until next time, I'll see you later. Can You Survive This Podcast is a production of Calvary Audio and iHeartMedia. Recorded live from a secure location here in Dallas, Texas. Produced by Brandon Morgan, Jeff Apple, and Clint Emerson. Executive produced by Keegan Rosenberger and Dana Brunetti. For Calvary Audio, I'm Clint Emerson.